I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey, listeners. Happy Wednesday. If this intro sounds a little weird to you, it's because Laura and I are conducting an experiment. We are not in the same room. I am calling in and we're using our call-in equipment in hopes that someday we'll be able to interview guests from across the nation and even the world.
Yes. And so I probably sound a bit clearer than Sarah.
Yes. I am calling from the Echo Thrift Shop.
Another plug for Echo. That's awesome.
Another plug for Echo.
This is just going to sound this way for the intro, this little 1 to 2 minute hello that we do, and the exit after the interview. And during the interview, we were all in the same room with our guest.
Yeah. So speaking of our guest, I'm super excited about today's interview because we're talking with someone whom I met through Leadership Seacoast. And if you've been following along since the beginning of Creative Guts, you probably know that Leadership Seacoast is part of the series of events that led us here today.
Yes, and that guest is Zach Little. Zach has many avenues of his creativity, which you'll hear all about, but I'm particularly excited to talk to him about his podcast and podcasting in general. It's always fun to chat with someone who is doing something you're doing, and I'll be selfishly wanting to compare notes and get insight from a seasoned podcast veteran.
Yes, that he is. Among his many other talents.
Yes, he's also really funny.
Yes. He's a blossoming comedian in addition to being a musician and a videographer, and shares his hilarious insights about various creative ventures.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good interview. I'm excited. So with that, enjoy this upcoming episode with Zach Little. Thanks for being here, Zach.
Thank you.
I already made a noise. Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Hey, would you like to be my co-host and we can just kick her out?
That, sure. I you know, I've got the experience.
At least Zach is like actually useful. He could like edit and stuff. I'm just the charming face.
Oh, is that what you are?
Yeah, I'm the networker.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I will edit your podcast as long as you're okay with it. The lead time of being like 6 to 8 months.
Oh, reasonable. Totally.
People ask me all the time, like, when's that episode that I recorded with you coming on? I'm like, oh, yeah, when did we talk? October?
2016?
July, maybe.
Well, that's fine if our launch date isn't until, like, next January.
Yeah. It's a very weird thing, too, because what ends up happening is if you're trying to create a podcast that is a product of the way that you think over a period of time, that's very weird. Like, you have an idea at the beginning and you have a different idea at the end, and then it has to be in 45 minutes something that reflects somehow both of those, the way that you felt before and the way that you feel now. And a lot of time you're recording something that you wrote a long time ago and you're like, I don't feel this way anymore. I'm lying about how I feel because I know how I'm going to feel at the end, but I'm recording the beginning and the end at the same time. But I started thinking about this 6 months ago.
We're getting a look behind the curtain.
I know, that's tricky. Like the evolution of a podcast, if your podcast grows with you.
Yes.
Maybe you should stop procrastinating.
Don't you think that, I think all podcasts, by virtue of being just something where you talk for a long period of time, it's like impossible not to get super confessional. Like people who make podcasts about bad movies get into like their daddy issues like 2 hours in because you're just talking all the time.
Yeah.
How are you not going to get into that stuff?
Right.
It's always a peek inside your mind. And hopefully you become a better person because it's like therapy. Like hopefully you treat it like therapy and you become a good person at the end of it, you know, and not like worse.
And you owe everyone who's listening $110 per hour for your therapy session.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's how I view what I pay for podcast hosting on like Libsyn. I'm like, this is the cheapest therapy in the world. Cheaper than a copay.
Well, a lot of creative endeavors are like art therapy, you know, painting or dancing or playing music. So that kind of fits with the theme here for Creative Guts.
Ah.
Yeah.
Guts.
So tell us about you and who the heck you are.
Yeah, you're a musician and a videographer and a podcaster and
I'm a jack of all trades.
What don't you do?
You know what I am?
That'd be easier, right?
Yeah. I didn't even know that the second half of the saying jack of all trades is jack of all trades, master of none. But that's extremely appropriate. I do a lot of things not very well. So I started out in video. I worked in public access TV. This thing called YouTube started. We blew it off. We were like, that's not going to be a thing. my friends and I, we focused our energy on this website called Rever, which was, I've learned recently, was kind of like a venture capital experiment, but it was run out of like a TV station in Kentucky. And if you had the most viewed video on Rever that week, they gave you like $50. So we were like, you know, let's put all of our efforts behind Rever, you know,
for the chance of maybe getting $50.
Yeah, and like it paid our electric bill, you know, and then eventually Rever went under, and then we were playing from behind on YouTube for a couple of years. But, you know, had some success there for a while. I spent a couple of years writing this very involved blog about Twilight.
Wait, don't skip past that. Tell us more about that.
I was in college, and Twilight was becoming a cultural phenomenon, and I had heard from other people that it sort of espoused some very problematic ideas. This was like very pre-wokeness, you know? But what I would do was I would read it, and I would start to sort of identify these. I mean, as Twilight goes on, it gets worse and worse with the, like, endorsements of pedophilia and all kinds of, like, there are weird Lolita jokes in the subtext of Twilight. It's disturbing. So I wrote, like, I would write, like, more words per blog post than there had been in the chapter kind of thing. And it took me so long, like, years. Like, I was out of college and still doing it. It was, like, you know, a part of me in the very back of my brain, like, in the, like, the Get Out, what do they call that? When you're in the sunken place, you know? Yep. There was a part of me down there going, what are you doing? But I had to get through it.
Still, like, out there in the world?
Yeah, I'll send you a link.
We will let our audience know where they can find it.
I've done a little bit of Google manipulation to kind of like deep six it in the search results, but like it's still out there.
An anonymous name?
No, I have never done that.
Wow, that's guts, folks. Yeah. Very risky.
Everything I've ever put out on the internet, I've put my name on, which so far hasn't come back to bite me too badly. But anyway, yeah, I guess those were all – I've had a lot of, like, little creative projects over the years, and I guess the thing that I do now mostly is I have a podcast as well. So.
And what's that about?
So what I like to say is that it used to be a podcast about how to be a better creative person, and now it's a show about being a better, creative person. It's, like, it's gotten very – like I was saying before we started recording, or maybe we were recording, a podcast is kind of like therapy, and I think when I started the podcast, I, like, didn't have, like, a house and a baby and hadn't, like, reconciled my relationship with my father kind of thing. And over the course of, like, talking to my British YouTuber friends, all that came out.
Yep.
And now it's like, all right, once you've gotten over that, once you've addressed maybe some of the issues that made you a creative person in the first place, what do you do when you're on the other side of it? Like, what do you do with that creative energy that's just been, like, ping-ponging around inside you, fueling your angst for years? Is there a way you can, like, lasso that thing and, like, ride it to something more positive? I guess that's what's going on right now anyway with the podcast.
That's awesome. So do you think creativity is a product of your environment, or is it some nature in there too?
Ooh, that's a tricky question. I think it's both.
It's, yeah.
I think that, I mean, I grew up, I was not, like, athletic. I did not really like to be outside. I liked to like stay indoors in the basement and like watch MTV and like, you know, I didn't have a lot of close friends early on in my life. And really being creative was in fact one way to just like get friends, you know, like I started a public access TV show and that was like something for us to do because I didn't want to play basketball, you know, like when you're like a 15-year-old boy, what do? So, you know, I started a band and I started a public access TV show and I just kind of like kept piling these creative projects on top of each other as like a way of being social, I'm probably still doing that with the podcast, right? You get to just sit down and talk to somebody you want to talk to.
Yeah, it's a good excuse to, like, reconnect with all of our Leadership Seacoast classmates.
Yeah, it's true.
We haven't seen each other in, like, weeks, and it's just... it's very emotional when you, like, break away from Leadership Seacoast.
Yeah. It's like summer camp or something. I don't know. Have you ever been to summer camp? Like I said, not an outdoors kid. Not a friendly. The bad stuff would have happened to me at camp.
Are you in a band now?
No. I do my own music for my podcast, which is to say, like, I just, when I have time, I just, like, hit some drums and guitars and stuff. And, like, you know, and I like to hang out with, I have some more serious musician friends. I'm the least talented musician of all my friends, so I like to get them together and have them play music, and I participate.
What do you play?
I started playing drums. When I was in school, because like you got to pick an instrument for school band, and drums are the easiest music to learn to read. and I learned a little bit of guitar when I started like. I watched a Green Day concert on MTV. I recorded it on VHS and I watched it over and over again. And I learned how to play guitar from watching that. And that's about where my guitar skill begins and ends. Like I haven't really progressed beyond that. And so every couple of months, I'll pick up another instrument and learn how to play it a little bit. So it was like banjo was the most recent one.
I love that.
That's fun.
I'm a little like that too.
Yeah, I think. Especially with certain instruments, like ukulele is one of the ones that I learned not too long ago. Yeah, you got one on the wall there.
Yeah, behind you is a painting of my electric ukulele, and that's the one I play out.
Ah, cool. Yeah, so I think that the thing with like an instrument like that is if you get too good at it, it's obnoxious, right?
Oh,
so you have to become.
I'm not there. Don't worry.
So you have to. Yeah. So I remember reaching a point because the ukulele actually came relatively easy to me, and I was like, oh, I got to stop learning now.
It's a pretty easy instrument. It's not too bad. You know, if you get really advanced, I know what you mean. It's a little obnoxious.
Yeah. Yeah. There's you can find it on YouTube. Just Google like ukulele cover. And I'm sure the first person that you find will be like on the obnoxious spectrum.
Yes. We're going to Google it. We're going to find out who this obnoxious ukulele person is.
While you do that.
Ukulele? I don't want to put any YouTubers on blast.
10 pop ukulele covers.
Yeah, you're on the right track.
Most popular ukulele covers of popular songs.
Oh yeah, that guy. He's the guy who, you know,
the Hawaiian dude.
Izzy or whatever. He's if you spend more than 5 seconds on Pandora, that song will come up on shuffle, regardless. Yeah, if you're on the Metallica page for Pandora, they will throw that Over the Rainbow cover at
Pandora's
you.
Pandora's weird.
Oh, really?
It gets way out of control.
You still listen to Pandora? I thought you were on the Spotify train.
Very rarely. So I think that Pandora's radio feature is better than Spotify's radio feature. So if I don't necessarily know exactly what song I want to listen to, I will put on Pandora and like let it do its thing.
So you are able to just let some other system pick which music you're going to listen to?
Oh, hell yeah.
I am so not like that. I'm so controlling over my Spotify playlists and everything. Whenever it gets to radio, I'm like, no, I don't want to, even if it's a song I love, I don't want to hear it right now.
Spotify radio is really stupid though. It's bad. It's just not a good, maybe Spotify just doesn't get me. You just started a career as a comedian. Can you tell us about that?
So, like, I've always, like, told jokes in videos and stuff, and people were always saying, like, you should do stand-up. It's so funny. I haven't heard that in so long, and it's really weird to start hearing it again. It never necessarily interested me as a as a format, mostly just because the barrier to entry seems so steep to me. Like, going to these, like, open mic nights and, like, asking to be on the open mic night and then, like, trying out a thing, and, like, it just seemed like... What I have liked instead is any opportunity that I get to speak to a crowd, I like to surprise them by being funny.
Yeah, your comedy style is less like stand-up and more like really funny professor, like educational comedy.
Yeah, it's probably, especially in the case of like a Leadership Seacoast speech, it was very heavily contextual, you know?
I heard there was a workforce housing joke in there, and so...
There were several.
Maybe a couple.
I was elated. Yeah, I heard about it before I even knew you existed. I heard about the jokes.
I ordered those jokes wrong, though. So the first joke was, hey, did you guys hear about Oliver's new apartment? He moved out of an old studio and into a beautiful Ann Taylor loft. And then the second one was... And it was within the context of a discussion about the fact that big box stores are the mill buildings of the future. People are going to be moving into big box stores. I'm sure you guys have heard about this by now.
Damn
listeners.
Straight.
And then the second joke was, did you hear about the developer who wanted to put 5 affordable units in his building due to cost overruns? He's down to 1 Payless. And I really agonized over that joke because I wasn't sure how conversant people were with the idea of, like, Payless shoes being referred to as a Payless. Like, I think in their own branding, they did. Does Payless still exist?
Yeah, they exist.
I think they refer to themselves as Payless. Payless.
I've been in one in like
a
decade.
I thought the one in the Newington Mall just closed.
What is still open in the Newington Mall?
A couple things. You can get pizza or cookie dough.
I think there's still a Spencer Gifts.
Spencer Gifts is still like...
You can get pizza or cookie dough.
Those are your meal choices.
Oh.
Even the McDonald's closed. If you can't keep a McDonald's open, like...
The one that does not bode well. Closed too. McDonald's in Newmarket closed. There's no fast food in Newmarket.
Yeah. Why are millennials killing fast food restaurants?
Dun, dun, dun.
Find out in the next episode.
Why do millennials prefer fast casual? I don't know, but have you ever gone into like a restaurant that has like a very weird set of rules? One time I walked into this pizza place in Boston and they were like, have you ever been here before? And I said, no. And
I hate that question.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And
I just
like,
want my damn food.
Yeah.
It's so arbitrary. Who made that up that like every time people walk into a restaurant, you're going to ask them like if they've ever been here before? It's so stupid.
It's the equivalent of when you call your doctor's office and they're like, please listen to all the menu options as some may have changed.
Yeah, that's
like
bullshit.
Everyone's
Why
changing
change?
All the time. All the time. No, you just want me to waste time here.
So the pizza place, they hand me a ticket. And they're like, so you pay for this ticket. Then you take this ticket over here and you tell this guy what kind of pizza that you want. And if you want to get a drink over here, go over here. And I said, no, thank you. Never mind. I'm going to leave. And they said, are you sure it's really good pizza? And I said, it's not worth it. It's not worth the organizational obstacles you guys are putting up to this pizza.
Just sell pizza the way everybody else sells pizza.
Should have been like, I already got my 10,000 steps in for today. This is
We're creatures of habit, you know? We do things the way that they're done.
I think that if there were a better way to run a restaurant, we would have figured it out by now.
Right.
Like, I don't think we need to reinvent this particular wheel. I think the system works.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I kind of sound like a NIMBY, like, we don't like change.
Okay, well, when you put it that way.
Yeah.
Sure, fine. Give me all the weird pizza place rules you want. Throw them at me. I don't want to become a creature of habit. I do, you know, I try to change all of my like creative workflows to bring it back to that. I do a lot. I change the way that I edit my podcast like every time. I change it all the time. You know, you got to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
That's the fun for me. Like the fun for me is like once going out and like gathering raw material kind of is stressful. But then taking it and turning it into something and editing, that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You should work with us, and you do it all. And I like gathering the raw materials, and editing is not as exciting. It is fun in a way, like, I'm imagining a parent, like, oh, my kid can ride a bike. Like, when you see something develop and grow, it's like, holy cow, how did this happen? But the amount of hours that at least I spend, maybe as a novice, too many hours on it, I'm a little bit of a perfectionist as well, so
I know
it's a long road of late nights and... Oh, you know? How do you know, Sarah?
I'll tell you, just try not to think about the fact that most of the time people are like listening to it in their car or maybe not even paying they're not even fully present. Listening to it, that's a thought I keep out of my head.
Yeah I know it's tough, like if I'm trying to make it all quite, you know, very even and everything. But if they're just listening to the content, as long as it doesn't sound bad, I don't think anyone's noticing if that level is perfect with this level.
Only people like you.
I just don't want to deafen anybody. That's my main thing.
Yeah.
You know? I worry about people turning it up to hear it. And then somebody makes a very emphatic point and then it's, yeah.
Or they switch to another podcast that's at a normal, you know, level.
Yeah. How is it that... I guess, is that what mastering is in music when they make it so that all music is at roughly the same volume level?
I don't know what the hell I'm doing with that.
That's a real magic trick.
Yeah. I'm trying to make sure all our podcasts are on the same level with each other and the norm. But yeah.
Do you do that like by any kind of actual mathematical thing or do you just do it by ear?
Both. Mostly by ear, but also by actual level.
See, I don't trust that. I don't trust those decibel levels. I don't get it. I feel like they're always adjusting and they're always... I think they're relative to each other. Like the readout that you're looking at there, it is relative to everything else that's happening. So yeah. If we were all whispering, then like the peaks and valleys or whatever of that would be relative to the whispering. So I get nervous about any kind of.
I mean, that's why my ears are the backup. I guess I
yeah.
I do that as well.
I don't really know what you guys are talking about.
Tell me this. Have you ever like in the dark ages of like iTunes libraries, were you ever like listening to one song that was maybe recorded in the 90s and then the next song came on and it was recorded in the 70s and you're like, why is this song at half the volume of the other song that I'm listening to? No, this never happened.
I don't think it's ever actively like occurred to me, but commercials.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there was a law passed that commercials can't be like twice as loud as the television show that you're watching. And that's just bull because they still are louder, in my opinion, mm-hmm. which is very scientific.
You just made me do a beep.
Sorry.
Beep. No, we've got this adorable little beep for curses.
Oh.
Do you swear on your podcast?
Yeah.
So do you have to put an explicit thing?
Yes.
You're a little okay?
I do.
There's
I
another
do.
Beep for you.
I put the explicit tab thing in there. The one time I didn't do it was I had some high school kids on the podcast, yeah. and so I bleeped some swears, and I had to give my friend Yara a heads up because I said, just so you know, you're the first person to swear in this podcast. It's about 40 minutes in, so don't be like weirded out by. It's not like because I don't even hear it when people swear. Yeah. I don't hear it. So, and I knew she wouldn't hear it either because she swears a lot. And so I knew what I was telling her, like, I didn't do it because you swearing is somehow worse. Like, yeah. it just so happens that you're the only person who swore in the whole episode. So you're the only one who's bleeped. But yeah, I had to give her the heads up because I didn't want her to take offense.
Yeah, we don't, not many of our guests swear, I guess. I think we do more so. I say darn and heck now because I'm just so used to editing and I don't want to have to do a ton of bleeps. And we just want this to be so everyone can listen and not, like, if kids, you know, it's about creativity and inspiration and
yeah.
that jazz. So we're hoping, you know, no parents will be like, oh, that's probably too adult.
Can we have, like, the what counts as a swear conversation?
We probably should.
I'm like, is damn really a swear? Is really a swear? Is hell a swear?
I don't think hell is, because yes. it's, you know.
So that one's not going to be bleeped.
That was permissive.
That was my
I don't think so. I haven't bleeped the other hells.
Oh, good.
Maybe there is a guide online that I should reference when editing, but.
Like, you did bleep me out when I said the B word.
Yeah, but then I later said, you called her a B, and I didn't bleep that out, so people know what the bleep was.
Yeah. I once wrote a very profane comedy sketch. It was my friends would do these like Italian guy voices, and they reviewed. I think they were two like Italian food reviewer guys, and I think they went to Taco Bell, and they were actually very enthusiastic about their first foray into like chalupas and that kind of thing. But there was a lot of swearing in it. And this was for public access TV, so we had to bleep it out. But we were in a room that echoed a little bit. So he would bleep, but then you could kind of hear it echoing afterwards. So we had to really extend the bleeps to cover the initial curse and then the echo after the fact. So it ended up sounding like they were being extra vulgar, you know, because all these words were so much longer than you normally expect a swear to be.
That's hilarious.
That's oh my awesome. God.
When I was, I sort of accidentally went to a Catholic college my first year of school, and I worked at the radio station. And when you have a radio show, you have to like, you kind of have to do like a, not an internship, but you know, you have to go and be at someone else's show to see how the ropes, you know? And so I ended up at this like late night Catholic school, guys who want to be like Howard Stern shock jocks, their show. And because you could not talk about anything that was sort of taboo on a Catholic college's AM radio station, which literally had the broadcast signal, like didn't extend even the full length of campus. they had all these code words. They had all these code words for like different, you know, sexual acts and practices that are not approved of by the Catholic Church. And they would just say all these code words. But I was like, you know, how did your listeners ever figure out what these code words mean?
Right.
Right? Because you had to have an episode where you're like, by the way, this word means this.
Are they saying it to get away, like not get in trouble by the
yes.
higher ups?
Yes.
Okay. So
All right.
So the higher-ups must be stupid then.
I didn't know if it was one of those things where people like, well, it's okay if I rephrase it this way. Like, I'm not going to hell if I say...
No, you know, I think it was, it was fake rebellion. Okay. But I will tell you that I don't think any higher-ups ever paid any attention to what was happening at that radio station. I think it was... I don't think they knew it was there, so...
If they had gotten a complaint letter, that's when they would have known.
Yeah.
So if it didn't happen, it didn't happen.
I'm going to retroactively complain about it.
My radio show was on a Sunday morning, and it was a Catholic school, so nobody was around to hear it.
You were just talking to yourself.
Even my roommates would be off at church and not listening to my show.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah. What was your show about?
It was just an indie rock radio. It was called An Hour and 60 Minutes with Zach and the Spoon.
Who was the Spoon?
He's my friend, the Spoon.
Okay, I didn't know if you had, like, some yogurt and you're just
You know what's so funny? No, so radio stations are always like, you know, with Jack and the Chief, whatever. And you wonder, like, how do these people, how do you end up with a radio station that's got, there's a guy named the Chief? It turns out these people already have this nickname and they just find the radio station like swallows to Capistrano. You know, so my friend Spoon was named Spoon. I mean, it's not his legal name, but his nickname was Spoon. So the idea that we should do a radio show really started there. You should be a radio DJ. Your name is The Spoon.
Why was his nickname Spoon?
It was never properly explained to me.
Was his nickname Spoon or The Spoon?
I think it was The Spoon.
The Spoon is cooler.
Yeah.
Did you play a lot of Spoon?
He was like, he had like just found out about that band when we started the, he introduced me to that band. Yeah, this was like 2007. So it was like, it was a great time to have an indie rock radio show in Philadelphia, no less, which was like a hot spot for a lot of those bands.
I had a radio show in college. It was called Sounds from Next Door. It was not like a Jock Shock thing. I didn't have a cool nickname. It was just me. But I interviewed local musicians and only played music in New England.
I thought you were going to say you only played music from the next room. Have you seen that? That's a thing on Tumblr.
No.
People will play a song from another room and record it and be like, here's, you know, whatever, this song. But like think of a sad song, like a song by like The Weeknd or something. And they're like playing from another room because it like adds a layer of nostalgia to it or something. Yeah, it's a thing.
Well, we're going to look it up now. Everything's a thing on Tumblr.
Yeah, seriously. Oh my gosh. Do you feel like your, let's talk about your day job really briefly.
Sure.
Do you feel like your day job acts as like a creative outlet for you?
A little bit. So I train people. And so I am in a classroom with one or more trainees for 2 months at a time. And so that same kind of emotional filibuster effect we were talking about with podcasts happens in the training too. So I tend to tell people lots of details of my personal life, like really fast, you know, which I think is helpful. Like, I think it actually serves a function at the job because it's like, I'm like welcoming them into the corporate family, you know, and I have to be a little bit creative in the way that I present information. I have to present complicated information in a digestible way, which is something that I've been trying to do more and more with the podcast too. So I don't know if I made my creative outlet serve the strengths that I have to use at my job or like vice versa. Like, I don't know which thing I'm feeding to which.
Yeah, probably both.
But the other thing is just that it's a pretty flexible job, you know, so I can like leave in the afternoon to come be interviewed for a podcast and it's no big deal. So in that sense, it's very helpful for my creative life.
So in this training room, is this where you started practicing your like comedy routine?
Well, I think I started that a lot longer ago. You know, I was a very serious young boy.
Yeah, right.
Very early in my life. Like, I was very, I think if you ask my mom to describe what I was like up until like the fourth grade, she would probably say stressed out. Like, I was a very stressful boy. I was very anxious.
Me too, actually.
Yeah, and at a certain point, I don't know, like a cord got cut in me, and I started to learn to like take things a little less seriously. And I think the arc of my life has been every couple years, I learn to take things a little less seriously than before. Yeah, and
me too.
And I constantly look back at the other guy, and I'm like, man, that dude did not know how to lighten up, you know? And then 3 years later, I'm like, that dude did not know how to lighten up. So
I think it was like 6 years ago that my mom stopped describing me as high strung.
Yeah.
Like, see? I just.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. When I first met you, I thought you were a hippie. I mean, I still do. But yeah.
Thank you.
You don't show that side of you at all.
No, I've really like let go and like loosened up.
I still show it, I think.
You're a little high strung.
Yeah.
But just a little bit. And it's kind of endearing.
It's okay. It goes into all this.
That is evident just from the layout of the room, right? Yes. Where the controls are all in front of you and Sarah's just in front of a microphone that she can barely keep plugged
You're
in.
You're very astute.
Yes.
I've got my like phone with the interview questions. Like
I was thinking that because we joked and I talked to someone else about if someone else edited this ever, and I don't want anyone else to do it. I want to have control over it. Like, that's how bad it is.
I know.
Also, okay. I want to, like, take out anything stupid I say.
I still love you.
I have a problem where I have a hard time letting people edit things, too, and it's because I normally am forming in my head how it will be put together while it's happening, and I can't really let go of that idea, even though usually I have to.
Yeah. If they cut out something in the first bit that released something else, that's a problem.
It's a big problem. Getting stressed out just thinking about it. But again, not as much as I did when I was in third grade. What was the question originally? Was it about, when I started practicing? Started practicing my stand-up. Yeah. No, I mean, I remember when I got married, I went around to each table.
This was 10 years ago, FYI.
I was 21 when I got married. Wow. And I would go around each table and I was talking to people and I had my little like jokes about getting married. You know, I don't remember even what they were, but the ones that got the biggest laughs, I would use at the next table, you know? And so by the time I got to table 9, I had like a killer 3-minute set, you know?
That's
so
awesome.
So maybe it was around then that this started.
Yeah. You've been like honing your comedic act.
Even at work, actually, I used to, this woman used to sit across from me, Sani, and I do job shadow sometimes, people who might be interested in working for our department. And she's always like, I can tell which things you're going to say again. Like the next time you have somebody, because based on the reaction that you get, you're going to, he's going to use that line next time.
She totally called you out.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever have to train people who are older than you? And is that weird?
I always thought it would be. So I have I'm sure that some people listening to this can tell. I have such a like beta male energy that I've always thought that men who are a little bit older than me don't like me. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's not true, but I always think it's the case. So I was always pretty sure that when I had to start training people that were older than me, I would have a hard time with it. It turns out no. It turns out the harder part is people that are much, much younger than me. And that just has to do with actually all the things that you would think you would have problems with much older people. I don't want to say like respecting your authority, because I don't think that's a thing.
Right.
I don't think I have any authority. But like technological literacy is weirdly an issue with like 20-somethings. They use iPads. They don't know how to use a PC.
Oh, you know? Wow.
What's the mouse for?
Yeah. That's I never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's weird.
So it hasn't been as much of an issue. And actually when I'm married, I have a house, I have a child. So when I train people that are 22 years old, I might as well be 50.
Yeah.
You know, it does not, I am just an adult. So I embrace that energy though.
I've been running into this thing. I always assume I am 29 and I think I look young, but I don't know. I don't get carded anymore. So maybe
you
I
do,
look
but
old.
You're also extremely mature and you have a very esteemed position as an executive director for a nonprofit. So that makes, I think in my head, I thought maybe you were a little older because of that.
Yeah.
I think you can turn that on and off. And I think you do.
Perhaps. And I'm 5'1". So it's not like I'm like, you know, I don't have any sort of like authoritative stance, but I have this thing where like I talk to particularly older men and I'm talking to them about like workforce housing and the complications of land use regulations. And they're like, listening to me, and I just find it like weird and hard to believe still. I'm like, so you're gonna change your ordinance just because like I told you to? Like, what do I know? Why are you listening to me?
That's pretty awesome. I mean, just a few decades ago that would not be the case, so
right,
thank your lucky stars. You were born when you were born. Yeah.
Go 2019
for some things.
For some things.
Several steps forward over here, several leaps backward over here.
Oh, yeah. We've touched upon that here before, too.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mr. 45.
So you have a family.
I do.
And that's awesome. Go family. How do you balance that with creativity?
Well,
go and your family. Outlets.
Go family.
So I have a son who's 17 months old.
I thought you were about to say 17 for some reason, and I was like, what the
17 months old. And yeah, so you don't really balance anything. You know, like, just imagine that you're like, if you're about to drop something, and instead of dropping it, you kind of run with it, and you're like batting it in the air. That's kind of what's happening with me in everything. It's like a Pixar cartoon about a waiter or something.
Are you picturing this?
Yeah, and I just snorted, so it's very funny. That's a good one.
But that's really what it's like. There's no balance. There's you get things done in bursts, you know? Mm-hmm. A long nap here, an unexpected, weirdly scheduled day there. You kind of like, you cobble everything together. And I don't just mean creative things. I mean, like, managing the affairs of your house and like emotionally connecting with your spouse, and all you do it in weird bursts and chunks wherever you're able.
That scares the hell out of me.
It's actually honestly probably my ideal way of living.
Oh, well, good for you.
I have never been like an organized person. My wife and I are both like extremely busy people. We're also, we like to be social, as social as we possibly can, and very frequently do it at the, you know, to the detriment of the rest of our affairs. Like, we dropped everything and, like, threw together a dinner for a friend the other night because he, like, didn't have anything to do, and he texted me and was like, you guys want to hang out? And I'm like, yes, well, like, let's put together a whole dinner and do a whole thing and whatever. And it, like, it happened very quickly, and we probably should have slept or done something like that, but we didn't.
Yep.
It didn't take me long after meeting Zach to be like, you're a really good parent. And like, I've never seen you with Arlo. I don't know this, like, you know, 17-month-old child. I just think that, like, you seem really chill for someone who is the owner of a 17-month-old.
Mm-hmm. And is about, and there's a there's another, and another one coming.
Yeah.
Another baby coming.
Congratulations.
In Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're having another son.
Oh.
So it'll be Arlo and Isaac, and that'll be wild, but it'll be fun. To a certain extent, I think, this is kind of like when I first got a dog and I was really overwhelmed by the dog, I thought, oh, what I need is a second dog, because
I wasn't busy enough.
That way, they'll take care of each other a little bit too, right?
Yeah,
they'll entertain each other.
Yeah.
So,
Aaron, are you listening? This is the point I'm constantly trying to make about having two babies.
Two babies or two bunnies?
Two babies.
Yeah.
Luna doesn't like other bunnies.
I know. She's a bit of a...
She'll eat them.
She's a bit of a bee.
She's mean. Yeah. She lunged at me yesterday. She's just not in a mood.
She has a chaotic energy, I can tell on Instagram.
Can you tell that she's like in charge?
Yeah.
Who runs my Instagram? Is it me or is it Luna?
I mean, the fact that, like, you had this issue where she was chewing on, like, a cord, so you got something that would make her chew on the cord more was, like, that is really, that's a, you really leaned into the compromise there.
Yeah.
You know, she stepped back 3 feet and told you to meet her halfway, and you were like, sure.
She starts chewing on, no, actually, she was never even chewing on the cord. She was not interested in this cord. And so I'm like, I'm going to put a cord protector on it just in case. And she's like, cord protector.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I wasn't chewing in that area. And now I am.
This is how I feel about childproofing. I don't have a very childproofed house. I'll be honest.
That doesn't surprise me.
He gets into the cabinets. What's he going to do? You know, he pulls out pots and pans. There's this wire rack for, like, I don't know, cooling cookies or whatever.
Yeah.
He likes to use it and set it up as a gate because there are some gates around, mostly for the dog, not for him. But he'll take it and he'll, like, lean it very carefully up against the bathroom door and he'll, like, balance it perfectly. And it's really impressive. If I had childproofed that cabin, I never would have seen him do that.
Do you think Zach's a hippie too?
No.
I don't think I really have hippie energy.
No. Interesting.
Sorry.
I have a straight edge energy, you know?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
You've hit it.
I don't have the X tattoos on my hands, but it's closer to that.
Yes. I've known a few of you guys. Yeah. I am really nervous about having kids because I don't want to lose my schedule of my creativity. So you've just made me feel even worse.
Well, let me assuage you a little bit here.
I mean, it's going to be wonderful and blah, 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 right?
This is the thing. I mean, first of all, when you have a baby, they just sleep. They sleep all the time. So you can actually get a lot done. I actually made like one of my most acclaimed podcasts about the birth of my son in like the immediate weeks after he was born. Like I had time to put that thing together.
And what was your wife doing?
The baby was sleeping. She was sleeping. She was making, made Valentine's. We always make like handmade Valentine's. And so one thing that she was really adamant about was our baby was born on January 30th. She was adamant about still getting them out on time.
So close to my birthday.
Yeah. Our baby was actually due on Valentine's Day, but he came early. Aww. So she was adamant about getting these handmade Valentines done, and she did get them out, and everybody was like, whoa, what? You just had a baby, and you sent me a handmade Valentine? So, yeah.
Okay, that's impressive. I will give her that. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely, my wife does not have as much, like, creative time as I do because the baby does actually physically, literally need her more
She's
than me.
She's kind of a part of the equation that's yeah. needed. Yes. Yeah.
I would say that, you know, the reward of being the parent that the child desperately needs the most, that's got to be pretty good. Like, my son is kind of like, could take or leave you, you know? Like, when I come home from work at the end of the day, he's like, oh, great, cool, glad you're here.
Yeah.
But if, you know, when it's just me and him around, the times that he looks at me and goes like, mama, you know, I'm like, sorry. Sorry, man. Two more hours with daddy.
Ouch.
Yeah.
You're the B team.
Yeah. I joke, but it actually doesn't really bother me. It's not like, obviously, he's going to care about his mother more. That's exactly how it should be.
Well, she was a food source for quite a while. So,
yes.
I mean, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta eat.
And I think even now, I think she makes better food than I do. You know?
Yeah.
Like, she probably, like, gets the temperature of the peas right and everything better than I do. I know this to be true. So I think about when you were a kid and like your dad was making you lunch versus your mom. Like, yeah, you're eating scraps.
I don't think my dad ever made me lunch. I don't know what that would have been like.
My dad only knows how to make like what he calls a quesadilla, and it's just like a flour tortilla and some cheese like in a pan.
That's a good attempt.
The two meals that my father makes are quote unquote quesadillas, and then just like unseasoned steak in a pan, you know, like those are the two things. It's amazing he's still alive. It's amazing.
Let's talk about monetizing creativity.
Ooh.
Your thoughts on that, and also how having a kid changed that.
My thoughts on monetizing creativity is, you know, if you can possibly avoid it, don't do it. I think that this is probably a product of being like a fringe YouTuber for years. So a friend of mine hosted a show called Is It a Good Idea to Microwave This? He literally still gets stopped for it all the time on the street by people. A lot of people that I have met and am friends with were originally found out about me or met me because they were fans of this show, and then they followed my friend Jory to this show we used to do called Angry Films On, which, by the way, is like almost to the day 10 years old.
Wow.
So this was 10 years ago. And we would make some money then, right? And then there was four of us on this show, school and jobs and everything. It all kind of fell apart. But I kept putting YouTube videos up. And the audience obviously went down, right? Because I was a little more, I don't know. I was a little more politically confrontational. I was a little more avant-garde. And I also had very little interest in production values. You know the way a YouTube video looks? Like this very well-lit, very nicely shot? I hate that. I hate it so much. I think YouTube videos are so ugly. I think
you want the real grit.
I think if you can't make a movie that looks like Avengers Endgame, you know? Like if you can't make a beautiful thing, then make something that looks like dirt, you know? Like just natural light. If you're going to do any effects, then make them yourself and make them bad. You know, like I always thought too, like when I would put music in my videos, I would always only do like kind of lo-fi, like video music that would match the quality of the video, which is to say bad.
Sorry, lo-fi makers out there.
Well, that's the point, though, right? I've made some, like, lo-fi music. That's the idea. It's like there's a certain amount of fussiness that you don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
You can just play a guitar into a cassette recorder, and you're good. Do it, you know?
But put calling it bad is a little...
All right, fine. Not good.
Gosh. Jeez. Just, you know, unpolished.
I am defending the not good quality here. So at a certain point, I ended up with this, an MCN, like a multi-channel network. I think we refer to them now as multi-level marketing schemes. I got involved in one of those. And the idea was, like, you do, like, an ad at the beginning of your video and you get money for it. I tried it one time. I tried to do an ad for like a Jennifer Lawrence horror movie and I just could not do it. Like I could not with any conviction tell people that they had to see this stupid movie. Like I couldn't do it. And it was so, and I watched it, and it was so disingenuous. And I, for the first time ever, I used one of those online YouTube editing tools to cut the whole first minute out of my video like 2 hours after it went up. Cause I was like, no, can't do it. Can't do it. I have long advocated for, like, I have an office job, right? I have an office job and a creative career, right? My creative career does not usually make me any money. Every once in a while, some weird little job comes along or something and you make a little money. Cool. It's pocket change. You go out. But at no point did I have to fall into whatever the internet fad of the moment was and make videos about going to see a Jennifer Lawrence movie for like constantly diminishing returns. Everybody who ever made tons of money on YouTube doesn't make tons of money now unless they're a neo-Nazi or like an Australian girl who opens boxes while whispering into a microphone about neo-Nazi stuff. And there are people, there are neo-Nazi YouTubers who genuinely don't or didn't feel that way, but gradually followed the money to that point of view. And that's an extreme example, but I just think that there was a time when you could make money creatively, it could be your career, and it didn't involve those kind of compromises. Maybe, I don't know. Like, all this stuff is happening right now with like Taylor Swift and like the record label thing. It feels so 90s. It feels like something that would have happened to Fiona Apple. Mm. Like it doesn't seem like it should happen in 2019 because a lot of artists have their own imprint and they own the rights to their, because they figured this out 25 years ago. I don't understand what Taylor Swift didn't get about this.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know. I think that the road to monetizing is the road to compromise. And some people can make that work and I can't. So I have resigned myself to losing money through my creative enterprises for the rest of my life. And I feel good about it. I feel fine about it.
That actually makes me feel good. Like, if we never make any money.
We're not going to make any money.
Then we'll just, like.
I mean, it's fun to dream about it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But it ain't. It probably will not.
There might be a window coming up to just kind of make a little bit of money from the like venture capital type like weirdos who start podcasts, startup apps or whatever. There might be some take the money and run opportunities on the horizon.
Yeah.
But you just have to, it's got to be like a Revver.com situation, mm-hmm. where you just take the money and run. It can't be a long-term deal. It can't be a thing where you have an ad that, you know, whatever. You're not going to make any money from Casper Mattresses, but you might make money from Luminary or one of these weird apps that's starting up now as more people get interested in podcasts. I would say that maybe my hesitation about monetizing videos or whatever is just in general about the like the tenuous place that any kind of creative industry is in right now, because they really still haven't figured out how to write themselves after like the internet. You know, early on in my podcast, I was like really preoccupied with like the means by which people create things, just because all the people of like my generation went through every single thing. Like, we started at like cassette tapes and then CD players when we were like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old, right? I remember getting my first CDs.
Me too.
And then, you know, when I was a kid, I was always obsessed with what's the next thing going to be, because I knew about cassettes, then CDs. And I was like, oh, what are the next thing going to be? And then it was DVDs and I was fascinated by that. And then I was always imagining like some cube or something that the movies would come in next time. And if you had gone back to that boy obsessing over his new DVD player and thinking about what's next, and you say, what's next is actually nothing. Like, the physical media just won't exist. And that'll actually become a problem eventually, because people will, like, buy movies from Apple, and Apple's license for that movie that they paid for is not necessarily, like, forever.
Yeah.
You know, you may have paid $20 for a movie you don't get to keep. If you had explained that to me, I would have been like, well, that's a bad idea, and maybe you should go with my cube idea instead. But that's the way every individual creative industry has been. When I was a kid, I had one idea of what it would be like to be a creative person, and most of those routes, most of the roads that would have allowed that to be financially possible for me washed away in those years. And then new ones showed up, but only for a little while. And after I saw that happen like three times, I was like, well, I'm not going to take the bait. I'm not going to start walking down this road that's going to be gone in 2 years. And I think we're still there. I think we still don't have a solid road toward like being a musician, you know? Musicians that I love and admire have to tour all the time now. All the time.
Yeah. That's the only way they make money anymore, right? Like, I listen to their music for free on Spotify, and I give Spotify $9.99 a month, but how is the musician making any money unless they're selling merch or concert tickets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and they have really to, they have to tour for a lot longer. I think the like health implications of that are going to be really complicated. Probably,
and, like, having
probably some
a family.
Of the drug implications of that are pretty bad too. Yeah. You know, I think all that stuff doesn't, it doesn't bode well for having a music career.
Yeah.
It, at the moment, it's probably pretty good if you're like a person who wants to work in TV or movies, but I think everyone knows it's temporary.
Yeah. Has having a kid changed the way you feel about monetizing creativity?
So yeah, maybe a little, but not exactly. not exactly. Not in that way.
This is a leading question because Zach and I have totally already talked about this.
Yeah. It is at least, so I always thought I don't necessarily want to have a quote unquote creative career. Like, I don't necessarily want to work in marketing or anything like that, because I feel like the energy that goes into that doesn't go to the places that it was going before.
Yeah.
That said, when you have a kid, some of that energy just goes nowhere now. When he's a little bit older, it'll go into cool stuff. It'll go into like building robots and making green screen videos and stuff like that. But for now, it's kind of not going anywhere. And I probably have a little left over I could use. So now I'm thinking, oh, so do I maybe want to do something like that? Do I want to do a more tangentially and ostensibly creative job? Like, do I want to work in the creative sector? I don't know. Do I want to monetize my podcast? Still, no. No, I don't care about that. I do. I put the money. I put the music. I put the music for the podcast on like Bandcamp. It's not good, but like my deal with people is always, if you buy it for a buck or whatever, you can use it for whatever you want. You can put it in your videos and your podcast. I don't care what happens to it. You can do whatever you want to it. And I've made some money that way. A little bit. Again, it's like going out to dinner money. That's all.
Yeah.
But that's kind of nice. So that's, I'm cool. I'm cool with that arrangement. I am lightly evaluating my career choices right now. They're under review. Let's put it that way. They're under review.
Yeah. To be determined.
It is tough when you do a creative job that's not your heart and soul creative stuff, but like I do graphic design for a company, and I'm also a freelance graphic designer when I'm not doing actual fine arts. And it takes up a lot of that creative energy in a way that I wouldn't have done just out of the blue. So it's producing it and I feel good about it, but it's also sometimes can be draining, so that when I get in here, I'm just like, well, you know, I just don't always feel it because I've already expelled so much, you know?
Yeah. This is interesting because this is something that Aaron talks about a lot. He's trying to balance writing a novel and also creating music, and he paints, but he can't do more than one of those things at the same time, because as soon as he does one, it's like he has a quota of like creative energy and it's gone. Mm-hmm. So he has to focus on one at a time, and right now it's writing the novel. So he hasn't painted in a couple of years now, and he hasn't made music since sometime earlier
RPM.
This year.
Have you ever done the RPM challenge?
No, I actually do a lot of little things, but that's because I think I'm pretty ADD. And so when I get sick of one task, I jump to another.
Yeah.
And so right now it is more the podcast than anything else, but it has that has a lot to do with me becoming really disenchanted with like video and with YouTube and stuff. And there's really no other outlet for it. So other than like making nice home videos, which I do a lot of, there's really no outlet for video anymore, but that's okay. I don't feel like I have, if I am only working on one, I don't have any energy for the other because I feel like they're so different.
Yeah.
So I have tried like longer things. I've like written most of a couple of screenplays and things like that as well. And when I was doing that, I would do a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there. And it didn't feel like it was taking anything from anything else. I try to at least imagine that what I'm taking from is something else. I'm taking from the time that I would be sitting on the couch watching TV or something.
Yeah.
That's the part I'm taking from. I don't do that very much. People are always talking to me about TV shows and I haven't seen them. I went to work today and everyone was like, oh, Stranger Things season 3 is coming out.
I was just thinking that.
And I said, I haven't seen any of that show. And they were like, you got to watch that show. And I said, I'll be honest with you. I don't think I will. It sounds good.
Because you just don't have time.
I just don't. Yeah, I don't have time.
It's not something that you prioritize over other stuff.
Yeah.
But for the record, it is really a good show.
Using creativity to communicate social issues. Go.
One thing that really happened to me when I finished doing this Leadership Seacoast thing, and I was kind of like, I guess I was more aware of the things that I didn't know than ever before. I thought about how people younger than me, and just by virtue of the fact that I was popular on YouTube 10 years ago, the people who listen to my podcast are mostly younger than me. I thought about how could I explain this kind of stuff to me 10 years ago in a way that I would have found interesting. The jury's still out on whether or not that's possible. You know, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to use like humor and like weird loud music and sounds and stuff to like package up this medicine of like social issues, right? So instead of a spoonful of sugar, it's like it's a spoonful of jokes and guitar static and like loud drums and like a tangent about like a story that something that happened to me or whatever. And somewhere in there is like the social justice medicine. And trying to like fit that in there and make people aware of it and make people aware of what they're aware of and what they're not aware of. Because I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
What you know and what you don't know. And does it work? I don't know. I mean, I would say that I probably became like pretty politically aware because of like The Daily Show, you know? So that worked.
Yeah.
To an extent. I mean, considering the situation we're in geopolitically, obviously it didn't work. You know, like that's why Jon Stewart quit.
Right.
Like, I did kind of this political cartoon for a couple of years. It was called Rock and Sock and Robot. And people ask me sometimes, like, are you going to do new Rock and Sock and Robot? And I say, no, just watch the old ones again. It's still the same thing, but it's worse now.
Yeah.
It's the exact same issue is happening again, but it's just, it's a little bit worse. And I think if you're Jon Stewart and you do that for 15 years and you go, oh yeah, I've been doing this for 15 years and something's got a lot worse, something's got better, but mostly it seems like it's getting worse.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not helping.
Yeah. John Oliver is my favorite, you know, news anchor. I put that in air quotes.
I love him.
He's my favorite. He's my only source of, like, news on television.
I've had a hard time keeping up with John Oliver all the time because I get a little bit irritated by the joke pattern, which is always like, Donald Trump, you can't do this thing that you're doing. That's like if you went to a bar mitzvah and you did a thing with a something and white wine or whatever. You can't have that white wine at your bar mitzvah. You can't. You can't. You want it, but you can't. That's the John Oliver
joke. That was a really good impression. He does have, like, a very – there's something that he does –
it's a repetitive cadence.
He has a very repetitive thing, but there's a thing that he always says that I'm like, oh my God, he always says that. He says like, I'm not making this up, or I didn't make this up, or something like that.
I do really admire John Oliver's willingness to interact with and mess with the real world.
Yeah, me too.
Like, spend money on advertising in a foreign country.
Yes.
Like, I really enjoy that aspect of it.
Okay. Rapid fire.
I'm ready.
You promised to answer them rapidly.
I will answer them so quickly that you're going to have to slow down the audio to hear what I said.
Is there one piece of music or episode of your podcast or another tangible product of your kind of creativity that best represents you as the creative person you are?
I would say that it changes all the time. It's always like the thing that I made maybe a year or two ago because I'm always uneasy about the thing that I just posted and I hate the things that I made like 5 years ago, right? So there's a sweet spot in there. So I mean, I'm pretty – there's an episode of my podcast called Oh Boy. It's about my son being born, and it's also about music. It kind of has this because we had a sort of long labor process. I don't want to say it was difficult. There are some odd circumstances.
Yeah.
But anyway, the episode is also about, like, all my favorite unreleased music. So it's, like, about a baby that won't come out and about songs that don't come out. You
that's
know?
Awesome.
Oh, that's really cute.
So yeah. – and I really liked that the – synergy of those themes, you know, that was cool. I was happy with that.
I wonder if that'll still be your answer, you know, 5 years from now.
I don't know.
Probably not. It might be the equation.
It'll be the wrong vintage.
Yeah, it's possible. There's certainly, but then at a certain point too, then you get far enough back and you're like, that was pretty good. I will say, I just went back and watched, like, so my YouTube show that I was, my, like, first big hit was this thing called Angry Films On. It was, like, a weekly comedy show. It's 10 years old, so I went back and I watched a bunch of it to, like, maybe cut together a video, and I hated it. I will say, there's, so, a few jokes that I was not involved in, I liked. And everything else I didn't like.
Aw. Favorite color?
Green.
Favorite smell?
Oh, that's tricky. There's probably, see, I said I was going to be fast, and I don't really have an answer for this one. I'm not a very scent-motivated person, and I don't know, like, the names of flowers or, you know, like, I can't identify what a smell is.
Well, I mean, there's lots of smells, like fresh linen,
mm-hmm.
your baby's
hair.
Yeah,
give me some more, give me some more, give me some more.
The woods.
I kind of like
bread baking.
You know what I like? Ooh, I like the smell of charcoal. Like I like campfire. I do a little bit of smoke, like smoker, like barbecuing. I like that smell.
Oh, that's a really good smell.
That's a good smell.
Yeah.
Favorite taste?
Favorite taste. Oh, interesting.
The things I barbecue.
No, I'm not that good at it. So no. I don't know. I guess probably like coffee.
Zach reminds me of me trying to answer these questions. They're like really easy questions, but I'm like, no, overthink it until it's like. favorite kid? Just kidding. You can't answer that one because the other one's not born yet.
I only have one.
Yeah. Every time I ask people what their favorite texture is, I always go like this to like demonstrate what texture is, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting.
People
interesting.
Can't see me, but just you just have to use your imagination.
She looks like she's rowing a boat. It's weird. Doesn't make any sense.
I'll be sentimental and I'll say like baby skin, like my son's aww. Hands, you know. But I will say that I am very wary of the people that like romanticize having a very small baby. When I had a very small baby, everyone was like, this is the best part. Cherish it. And I was always like, you, I'm going to like the part where he's an old mean teenager way better.
Right?
Just out of spite. I'm going to hate this part because you told me to like it.
What a rebel. Favorite sound?
There's like a, okay, I don't really know what it's called. I want to say it's like a kind of guitar chord that's like an add 9 or something. There's like a transition between like a chord that's like a add 9 or an add 7 or whatever to like a minor chord. It doesn't really matter which ones, you know what I mean? But like that transition, I think that's my favorite sound.
That is like the most specific answer I've ever heard.
That's awesome.
Most inspiring place you've ever traveled to?
I don't know if there's any one. I very recently ended up in Warner, New Hampshire, which is like a tiny little hippie enclave. And it just seems like they're doing a lot with even just their remoteness. Like they're very interested in sustainability and supporting the arts and building like a nice artistic community through kind of some of their businesses. And I just walked around. My wife was at a bridal shower and I just walked around with my son for a couple hours and felt the vibes, you know, I felt good.
I have intense joy that you chose a New Hampshire location.
Hey, you know.
Like, intense joy.
A couple of years ago, I probably wouldn't have felt that way. Because, you know, I'm from New Hampshire, and I was always like a, like, never go home again kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to always say when we lived in Boston, this is like as far north as I will move, you know? Then we moved to Portsmouth, and I was like, this is as far north as I will go. And then I moved to Rollinsford, and I was like, no, but seriously. This is the limit. This is as close to back home as I will move.
Song you're listening to on repeat right now?
So let's think. There's this band called Titus Andronicus. They, I my best description for Titus Andronicus was something I read a couple years ago. They called it guitar-based endorphins. It's basically like what Titus Andronicus does. So they have a new album that came out the other day, and it's a lot of guitar-based endorphins. So I have been enjoying that. My son has been dancing to it a lot.
Aww.
It's been a good time.
That sounds adorable.
Yeah. So we're not done. Oh, sorry.
I wasn't leaving.
You got someplace to be? Like, no. No, we end every episode by saying in unison, show us your creative guts.
Show us your creative
guts. I know you're
guts.
A rebel, but is that okay?
Yeah, I'm let's do it.
All right. One, two, three.
Show us your creative guts.
What a that's you did in that voice.
That was really good.
That's my someone else told me what to say voice.
I thought it was great.
Thank you so much, Zach. That was a blast chatting, and we laughed a lot during that interview. He definitely has a voice for podcasting, that's for sure. And his physical voice actually reminds me of the voices of either Ira Glass or Mo Rocha, who are both podcasters and journalists. And especially, it sounds a little bit like Ira Glass's, not so much Mo's, but it's more about the quality rather than the exact sound. It has an interesting texture to it. And then aside from his physical voice, his creative voice is just fascinating to listen to. I think he's just got so much to say and a really interesting perspective on it. So if you want to hear more of that really cool voice, check out the last podcast, which we will be linking on our Facebook page.
And didn't we tell you that Zach is hilarious? He's a blossoming comedian, and I'm totally serious about hiring him for future stand-up comedy.
He is really funny, and I think he talks about being situationally funny, and, you know, I think he could do it either way. He's just a really funny guy.
Thanks again so much, Zach Little, for joining us and for sharing your insight as a fellow podcaster. If you want to hear more from us, Creative Guts is available on all major podcast platforms, and of course, you can find us on Facebook, where you can check out our selfie with Zach and some links to his podcast, The Last Podcast.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Star Trek, Star Wars, or both?
I'm not super familiar with Star Trek, so
that's fine.
Star Wars by default.
Okay. Usually it's one or the other. I'm one of those weird breeds of heavily both.
And you and Aaron are both on like the Star Trek side slightly?
No, I would say I'm very 50-50. It's like asking if I like my cat or dog better. But if you go Star Trek...
I like my dog better.
Whoa! Is the cat your cat or your wife's cat?
We actually don't have cats anymore. We used to have cats.
She asked me that on for a rapid fire question. I was like, dude.
I asked you, but in parentheses it said, just kidding. Just that's kidding. Too cruel. And I had a second question.
But for Star Trek, Star Trek Voyager, we're on the same page about what's the best ones.
So. Okay.